And welcome to Citizens Climate University, a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics relating to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's topic is working with other organizations. We're going to have a wonderful series of examples of effective outreach with environmental allies. So let me introduce our esteemed speakers this evening. First up, we'll have the wonderful Elise Klein. Elise is a longtime climate activist and health coach and is the outreach coordinator for the Alameda County chapter of CCL and has produced several high-profile events that she's going to describe tonight in Berkeley that have brought attention, recognition, and new members to the local chapter. She's going to share ideas on how you can reach out not only to other climate advocates but to the general public, and is looking forward to hearing your ideas, as I know all of our presenters are, on how to also gain visibility that you've had success with. Next up, we'll have the wonderful Carol Kravitz, who's been a production coordinator in film and television for over 30 years. She's got a lot of wonderful stories that you can ask her afterwards on her work with Breaking Bad, This Is Spinal Tap, and Party of Five, to name just a few. In her active retirement, she volunteers her time to fight the climate crisis with Citizens Climate Lobby on the national level and other organizations more locally that she'll describe in her Day of Dialogue section in just a little bit. Following Carol, we'll have the wonderful Tom Moyer. Tom was on back in January to give us a little sneak preview of their efforts in Utah and will be returning tonight to give us the update on what's happened since then. When he's not volunteering with CCL, Tom is a mechanical engineer working with HDT Robotics on explosive ordnance disposal robots, another fascinating topic that I'm sure he'd love to speak more about outside of the webinar. And he also teaches elementary school science to fifth graders at McGillis School in Salt Lake City. And then the wonderful Stephanie Doyle, CCL's National Partnership and Outreach Coordinator, who's based in DC and has been with CCL for a very long time, starting as an intern with the wonderful Amy Bennett out in Southern California. So let's just quickly review the learning goals. Tonight, hopefully after this lesson, you should be able to do three things. Highlight specific examples that we've provided of how CCL groups have built successful relationships with other organizations in their chapter. Really understand how to engage and partner with other organizations, both locally and nationally, in a respectful, understanding, and productive manner. And really use these examples to prepare your own local plans for partnership and working with other organizations. The agenda is pretty straightforward. We're going to have Elise go first with creative outreach ideas for chapters. Carol will then talk about her Day of Dialogue approach with Southern California's outreach. And then we'll have Tom discussing state-level coalition building. And Stephanie will take it from there, talking about opening considerations and basic outreach guidelines. And then also discussing how CCL National works with others.
Hi, everybody. Elise here from Alameda County, California. I'm going to give a really brief high-level view of the kind of work that the Alameda County chapter has been doing over the last 3 or 4 years, and we've made lots of coalitions with lots of groups and lots of outreach to lots of different groups, and I'll just give you an idea of some of the things that we've done here. So I'm going to first go over the benefits of local outreach, and of course, one of the first ones that we have found is that we've made many strategic alliances with the kind of events that I'm going to be talking with you about. And this is pretty, a lot of them are, our area is a very progressive area of the country. So I have to say almost all of these alliances are with progressive organizations. It's given our organization, Citizens Climate Lobby, a lot of name recognition. I think when I first joined the chapter, I don't think anybody in the area really knew who CCL was. And over the last few years, because of a lot of the events that we've been participating in and sponsoring, I think CCL is pretty well known in the community here. It's given us a lot of appreciation and respect within the people who work in the climate and with anybody who's really familiar with the kind of work that we're doing. It's given us opportunities to outreach to the business environmental communities. We've done quite a bit of public education and awareness raising, and you'll see that in a minute. We've produced events that have given us great tabling opportunities. Great opportunities to garner a lot of constituent letters, which we deliver to our congressperson almost every time we meet with them. We're handing them a fistful of constituent letters. We have done, it's enabled us to do some outreach and publicity in the local media market, although this is something I think we need to do more of. And also do college and actually high school and junior high school outreach because of some of the events that we've produced. So I'm going to start with talking with this about this one. Okay, so this is an event that we did in, I believe, in 2015. This was our first big public event that we did. It was on a Monday night. We have an environmental center in Berkeley. You may or may not be familiar with it. It's called the David Brower Center. It's a beautiful place, and they've got a theater in here. And the David Brower Center has been very, very supportive and generous with us and has donated on space for us for several events at the Goldman Theater at the Brower Center. So this was hosted on it. We did this on a Monday night, and we produced an event called Carbon Pricing 101. And you would think on Monday night was such a wonky topic, we'd hardly get anybody. We had standing room only. There were over 200, probably about 250 people came out to this event. With this, we partnered in producing the event. We partnered with the League of Women Voters, with Berkeley Climate Action, with the Berkeley Ecology Center, and with the David Brower Center. And we also invited to that a number of people, like Peter Barnes, who has written a book on carbon pricing. We had the Environmental Defense Fund there. So we had a number of different organizations that participated in the actual panel. And it was really the first time that we had really gotten out there, and we got a really great response from this. And it was the first time that we'd really actually been able to partner with some of these organizations that we have since worked quite a bit with. The following year, we did another event at the Brower Center for Earth Day. This was called the Berkeley Climate Action Expo. We actually partnered with 14 different environmental organizations on Earth Day, and we had tabling all over the Brower Center at the same time that we showed to a completely sold out showing of Leonardo DiCaprio's movie Before the Flood, which is a great, if you haven't used this movie, we've used it in a number of different venues. It's really a great tool. Give you an idea of that. I'm just going to keep going through these really quickly. We showed that movie again at the North Berkeley Library, and we've partnered with the library, and we have actually shown this at several different branches of the libraries, both in Berkeley and in Oakland. And all of those are well attended too, and it's just another opportunity to do outreach to the public and to partner with the local libraries. We have a film series that we've been participating in. One of the local movie theaters offered us a night to produce. They get the funds, but we produce the event, and it gives us a tabling opportunity, an outreach opportunity, to show Merchants of Doubt at one of the local theaters. They have like a documentary night. So we've done one or two of these. I think we did Chasing Coral too. Again, another way to outreach to the community, get our name out there, table, partner with other organizations. And then this one on the Fight to Save Winter, which was, I'm sure you probably, most of you got the email on this, that this was available to us. And we showed this with REI, and they co-sponsored this event with us. And again, great opportunity to REI. This was a big event that we did this year. This was for Earth Day. This past year, we partnered with a group called Compassionate Living, which is a animal rights organization, and again, the David Brower Center. And we were we sponsored the Wild and Scenic Film Festival, which I'll talk about in a minute, in conjunction with the Earth Day event, which was produced by Compassionate Living. This is all going on at the Brower Center. So we had hundreds of people come through. It was a very successful event. We used it as a fundraiser. We actually raised a couple thousand dollars for our chapter, which was pretty good given that this was the first year that we had done this. But it really gave us, again, a working relationship and outreach to the animal rights community, which we really hadn't, talked with them a whole, even though there is some overlap in terms of our members. It's like it's a whole new group of people that we really hadn't engaged with before. And one nice thing was that we were able to comp tickets to people from 350 and some other organizations that we work, also 40 California, some other organizations that we work with pretty regularly. It's just a good way of creating goodwill. And it was just all around a really positive experience. I want to talk a little bit about the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. This is a great environmental film festival. I've been going almost every year for the last 17 years. It's a 4 or 5 day festival up in Nevada County, California. There were actually 7,000 people there this last January. The picture on the right is me and another of the GL from the Sacramento chapter giving an activist workshop. They, in addition to having 130 something films all on environmental topics, they have 2 days of continuous activist workshops. We gave this is the second one we've given at the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. This year it was on making progress in the current political climate. So it wasn't exactly on CCL, but it was all about CCL. And it was another terrific opportunity to do outreach. So the Wild and Scenic Film Festival has an on-tour program, and you're probably going to be hearing more about this. They've actually created a program just for CCL. I think, Stephanie, you know about this, but we didn't use that program. We curated our own program that was kind of geared for Berkeley, and we showed, we partnered on this with our Children's Trust, and they showed one showing. We did 2 screenings. It gave us a chance to get sponsorships from local businesses, to outreach to local businesses, to show these films, which are on totally related environmental topics. And again, to draw more people in, we at the beginning of each session, we did show, of the 2 sessions that we sponsored, we did show the short 2-minute CCL kind of intro video. So it was a great outreach tool. And we're planning on doing this again next year, and a great fundraising tool. Right now, I'll talk about first the one on the right. We do all kinds of crazy things. One of the things we did is we decided to participate. We have something called the Solano Stroll here, which is a big community stroll. There's like 200,000, I think actually it was 250,000 people this year. That it's a mile long street that's right in the middle of the neighborhoods down here. And they have a parade, and then they have all these booths. So we did a booth this year, and we also did a parade, and we marched down the street, and we were chanting all kinds of crazy chants that we were making up. I wouldn't say that was the best outreach art, but it was kind of fun. And what we're doing right now is we are getting ready for the Rise for Climate, Rise for Jobs, Rise for Justice March that's happening on September 8th. It's going to be the largest climate march on the West held to date on the West Coast, in conjunction with the Global Climate Summit that Jerry Brown is sponsoring. And we are very involved with this. We are organizing all of the our chapter is basically coordinating what's going on here in Northern California in terms of what's happening with this march. And we're also CCL, a number of people within a number of the chapters in Northern California are doing a mini summit within, as outside of the summit, but related to the global climate summit, which is attracting people from all over the world into this summit that Jerry Brown is producing. So we're also very involved in that. In fact, this mini summit that CCL is sponsoring is going to be both at the Google headquarters and at the and at the Gap. So it's, again, there's a lot of business outreach, community outreach going on with all of these things. We did, one of our members took on and we organized a labor forum. We did this in conjunction with a number of different labor unions and had several different panelists from different unions and did a panel on climate change and labor challenges and opportunities. I unfortunately was not able to attend, but I understand it was pretty successful and it began to give us connections with people in the labor movement. We hold regular chapter development social events where we outreach not only to our members, but also members of the community. We've been having these pretty regularly. We were also moving our chapter meeting between Berkeley and Oakland. It goes back and forth every month just because we're trying to outreach to more organizations within Oakland. And this picture on the right, some of our members at a bar in Oakland. So we've been doing a lot of just kind of social events as outreach. I'm just going to give you a few key points. One is everything that it seems like a lot of what we're doing is just coming from inspiration. Somebody has an idea and we go, okay, let's do that. And then people work together to make that happen. The size of your meeting really doesn't matter. You just don't know who's going to show up. And I've had incredible things happen when I had somebody join who was one of our key members. I went to a 350, somebody invited me to speak at a 350 meeting. I held up my hand. Does anybody want to talk carbon pricing? Two people showed up. And one of the people who showed up is now a very active member of our chapter. Very important. Use all of your outreach events as opportunities to work with strategic partners. We very often co-sponsor with other organizations. We're usually the lead, and then we bring other organizations on. All of these activities are really great for increasing community awareness. Always table and take names at all the events. We have a monthly newsletter that goes out. I think we've got over 1,000 people on the mailing list now, so it gives people a way of connecting with us and keeping up with what we're doing. You can take advantage of these events as fundraising opportunities, as ways to make connections with the business community, with sponsorships. It gives us outreach, to do outreach to the schools at all levels. This is a great way to involve new members when we're planning these events. We use the new members. They participate. They plug in on whatever level they can, because lots of people come to meetings and they're really lost at the beginning, even though we always do an orientation at the beginning of all of our monthly meetings. But this is like somebody who really doesn't know what's happening and they just want to do something simple. They can come and take tickets, or whatever. And then we have fun. All of these events have been really fun and challenging and interesting and successful. So for the most part. So I think that's it for us.
Big round of applause, Elise. This is absolutely huge, and we are so grateful. I'd call 250 people attending any kind of a carbon pricing forum a success. So I think you've definitely set the bar high for the rest of us. And for now, I'll actually pass the baton from Elise to Carol, if that's all right. And I'll make sure you're unmuted as well, Carol.
Well, thank you very much, Brett. And for this chance to share our day of dialogue, I'm Carol, obviously. And I'm with the Pasadena Foothills chapter of CCL. And I'm also the liaison for California 28. I'd like to start by sharing my gratitude to our steering committee, who was very responsible for putting this day of dialogue together, and the rest of the groups that we brought together, because they really showed courage and a willingness to listen, which I think really made the day. So I want to share our story about how we decided to do a solutions forum with other local green groups. We brought them together. We listened to each proposal. We wanted to know, how do we get to zero emissions or 100% clean energy? And Brett's going to share the link to the resources on our website. And you can go through all the notes, and we put together a great agenda, if I don't say so myself. We were going to do a forum on carbon fee and dividend. We wanted to bring folks in, tell them what it was all about, and then I-732 in Washington failed, and our focus changed immediately. Because it failed when many environmental groups vocally opposed the measure, deciding that a price on carbon was a vote for oil, gas, and corporations. So we decided that we wanted to invite 4 additional environmental groups, so we would be 5 groups. We didn't want to overwhelm the day. Food and Water Watch, Sierra Club, California Interfaith Power and Light, and SoCal 350. None of the environmental groups overlap with CCL's mission to put a price on carbon, but we do to preserve a livable world. So this is, there's a wide variation in our approaches, our goals, and our strategies. And this same situation is one that could plague us all on a national carbon pricing effort. So it's really important that we bridge the gap. So the steering committee, which is a really great working group, designed a great concise agenda. We paid real careful attention and put a lot of thought into how we were going to plan the day and all the details that went with that. We were intentional about setting important ground rules about respect-based listening, making clear that each of the organizations were there in support of working together and learning from each other. There were 5 representatives from each of the 5 organizations. We had the room set with 5 round tables, and we opened the day with introductions, a light breakfast, and followed by 5 presentations, 1 from each organization. The presenters were asked to speak to 3 questions. What's your climate plan? What's its strengths? What's its weaknesses? And what is your plan to get it adopted? The event's purpose, our mission, read as follows, quote, "These are challenging times. Joining forces and understanding one another as environmentalists with common goals yet sharing different strategies can only make us stronger and wiser. The purpose of our meeting today is to learn more about each other's ideas on how best to mitigate climate change in order to preserve our planet. And most important, we will explore how we can understand and support each other." So we wanted to set the tone. Our John Nodell spoke first. That's the guy at the end. Robert Haw, our chapter lead, reminded attendees in his opening statement, and I quote here, "We're all after the same objective, decarbonization as soon as possible. Although each of the groups have identified a different roadmap for achieving it, yet the difference should set us apart. We're all travelers on the same road," end quote. Each group was allotted 20 minutes for their presentation, and we had 10 minutes of questions after each one. We took a working lunch because we didn't want to waste any time by just kind of going off and eating. So we moved everyone around, so there was 1 representative from each organization at each table. And there again, we had 3 more questions that we wanted to answer. What common ground are there among our climate plans? How can our organizations understand and support one another? And what are the next steps? Well, we found that there were significant differences across the gathered groups in terms of policy priorities, organizing tactics, and there was also significant and encouraging discussion that emerged from our combined notes from the day. Again, if you want to know more, you can go read it all. We recognize that while each organization itself might best represent its own unique niche in the ecosystem of the climate movement, there was some overlap across the groups that we felt we might benefit from and following some actions. Now, you can read what the 7 actions there. I'll just say a few things about some of them and add some. Of course, the sharing actions, you know, whether it's a call-in day, a Twitter storm, the campaign, are we choosing a national local march, the Rise for Climate, Earth Day, and have all the groups march together? That hasn't happened yet. Showing up at critical moments to support each other, working from bottom-up pressure from our chapters to ask the organization leaders from all of them, Sierra Club, 350, Power and Light, CCL, to come up with common goals. And I have seen some of that happen at the national level on CCL. Extending new connections with maybe coffee one-on-one. And just lastly, organizing another day of dialogue possibly as a next step so that we can come up with, discuss and explore issues that we don't hold in common and see if we can come to common ground. And of course, we're all working here on impacted frontline communities. So the reflections and advice and what we learned and how we would advise other groups to have a similar event. We acknowledge that it's important that each local CCL group is going to be faced with their own differences and palette of organizations that work that you're going to work with, whether you're strategically building and collaborating with them. What worked in Pasadena Foothills might not be effective elsewhere, and vice versa, vice versa. So all in all, it was a really good day. Not without human foibles, a bit of general grandstanding, but a good day because it was the beginning of the dialogue. It turns out people are people, whether they identify as Democrats or Republicans, men or women, we want to be listened to. We want to be heard. We get our feathers ruffled because we have a hard time of letting go of being right. So let's continue the conversation wherever possible. That is key. We want to be able to focus on how we're moving towards working towards a solution, and in the process, help us clarify CCL's goals and approach. That's where the real work begins. So we open our hearts again and again. We build connections. We achieve our common goal. And I'd say in the end, it was really worth it. Any questions?
Thank you so much, both of you, for your leadership and demonstrating that the rest of us can learn from. The floor is yours now, Tom.
So I'd like to talk a little bit about an effort we've gone through in the last year to pass an environmental stewardship and climate change resolution in the Utah legislature. This is something that's been 2 years in the making, and it started with the group of students you see in the picture there from Logan High School. They wrote and proposed the first version of this resolution, and the goal, the stated policy of Utah since 2010 has been that climate change is a hoax and that we should do nothing about it. That was a resolution that passed in 2010. So the goal of these students was to overturn that resolution. And they wrote, the first version of the language specifically stated that it was overturning the 2010 resolution. And they shopped it around the Capitol, and they got a Democratic senator to run it, to their credit. That resolution went to a Senate committee and promptly ran into all kinds of opposition and was indefinitely shelved in the Senate Natural Resources Committee. So this picture is actually from a mock hearing that they held, since the committee chair wouldn't allow an actual hearing on the legislation. And at the mock hearing, they had tons of public. They had something like 10,000 views on Facebook Live, and they had a half a dozen legislators, two of whom were Republican and one of whom was so enamored of the idea and the students that she took it on for herself and ran it as her own resolution. She then significantly changed the language to make it more appealing to her colleagues, make it something that could actually pass the Utah legislature. And this February, we passed it. So the groups that were active in working on this legislation over the last year were CCL, the high schoolers from Logan High School, the Utah chapter of the Sierra Club, another nonpartisan group that works on many issues called Action Utah, and an environmental group, a local environmental group called Heal Utah. So I have to tell you that the environmental space in Utah is full of other groups. There are at least half a dozen environmental groups that focus on clean air. And they, by and large, stayed out of this topic and this resolution. I think they've all decided that there is space for them to act on clean air and there's space to forge agreement on air quality, and there isn't space for them to talk about climate change. The groups that were involved in this, some of these groups only talk to people who already agree with them. So the groups that were really effective at this, at talking to legislators, were CCL and Action Utah. And both of them have a presence throughout the state and are really, really good at talking to legislators on both sides of the aisle without ruffling any feathers. League of Women Voters, I threw on this slide as well because we're doing a lot of work with them lately. And they have similar properties. They're great at talking to all kinds of people. And this process, by the way, for CCL really, really forced us to reach outside of our urban core and focus on where we have CCL members in each of these representatives' districts, which has been really great for us building as a state. And then the final group on here, HEAL Utah, is one of the local environmental groups, but they turned out to be great. They had tons of business contacts that they were able to bring on board. So ended up being a really productive relationship. So this, I'm going to focus on an event that we held at the legislature, and it was proposed in a lobby meeting by one of the sponsors of the resolution, Republican. And some of these high school students were in that lobby meeting, and she threw out the idea of, why don't we host a climate event at the Capitol during the legislative session and see how many legislators we can get to attend. So we kind of took this and ran with it. The groups that worked on that were these high school students. These are all the ones that actually attended the evening, and CCL, and then one main organizer from the Sierra Club. These are our two principal legislators that really drove this. Becky Edwards was the initial sponsor on the resolution. Joel Briscoe was the initial sponsor on a state-level carbon tax bill, and they're both now co-sponsors on that bill. So a lot of the success of this is credit to their skill as legislators at talking to their colleagues and navigating their way through something as difficult as this that's likely to have a lot of opposition. So students really drove the process. They planned the whole evening, this panel evening, and they did all the initial invites to legislators. They invited each legislator, we have, I think, 103 of them. They invited each of them individually, followed up with phone calls to each one. And then we had CCL members additionally, wherever we had CCL members in legislative districts, we had them follow up with their legislator. So we ended up with CCL contacts for about half of the legislature. So this is what the panel evening looked like. We set it up as individual tables and we organized them by county. So we had students wherever we could, we had students from across the state sit with legislators from the same county that they were from. Congresswoman Mia Love, who's a member of the Climate Solutions Caucus, recorded a video introduction for us. And then you can't tell up there on the panel, but among that panel is, we had one climate scientist, one CEO, one college student environmental group, one mayor, and then the governor's director of the Office of Energy Development. And that's something that some people disagreed with, thinking she's not supportive enough. I think this, the legislators who attended this, many of them attended because she was there, because that lent for them a huge stamp of credibility to this, that it wasn't just a bunch of liberal environmental groups doing this. This had broad support. So this is what the table discussions looked like. The panel was actually not the heart of the event. The heart of the event was the conversations between legislators and students. This picture is my 16-year-old daughter facing us, and next to her is the biggest climate skeptic in the entire Utah legislature, who happens to be chair of the Rules Committee. So we did not end up getting his vote, but we did get him to a climate event, and we did get him not to kill the resolution. And he could have, you know, he's got the power to make it go nowhere. So he let the process continue. He let it pass through and go to a reasonable committee. And despite the fact that he voted against it in committee and on the floor, it ended up passing over his vote. Becky Edwards, the sponsor, will tell you anytime she's asked that the effort to reach out to opponents of the legislation was key to passing it. And there were significant changes made throughout the process. We ended up passing a much weaker resolution than we would like to have passed. It's still a climate resolution, and it still says the state of Utah needs to find ways to start reducing emissions. That's a huge, huge step. And the headline still said, Utah passes, you know, climate resolution, Utah overturns 2010 resolution, and so on, even though the bill no longer said that. But the effort to reach out to legislators like this, and he was far from the only one, some of them we did get their votes, was a hugely important piece of the process. So this is the list of businesses on the right here with their logos. Heal Utah brought in a lot of those. CCL did most of the contacts with the ski areas. People not from Utah will probably not recognize how significant some of those businesses are. We have our electricity generator for the entire state there. We have the largest mining company in the entire state. We have two groups representing the high-tech industry in the state. These are some of the heaviest hitters in the entire state of Utah. Getting them to sign on to this was not an easy feat. Nobody wanted to go first, right? Once you've got 10 of these, everybody's happy to be number 11 on that list. Nobody wants to be the only one and then see if anybody else follows. So there's a huge amount of work that went on by Heal Utah primarily, and then and to a lesser degree by CCL, in meeting with these businesses and business groups one by one by one and talking them into believing that we actually can pass this thing. Some of them actually explicitly said, I'll sign on, but only if you can show me you already have the votes. And we said, wow, thanks for the courage. We didn't actually say that. We thought, thanks for the help. In the end, we got them. We got the letter, we got the votes. So I'm skipping over a whole bunch of lobbying that happened between then and actual passage, but this is fittingly the high school students who originally proposed the resolution getting to be the ones, the only ones, along with Becky Edwards, the sponsor, at the signing ceremony with the governor. And I'm happy to take any questions about it.
You're getting mad props, Tom. What a heroic story. Tom, I'll pose a question here, and then we will have to move on. But if you had one piece of advice for anybody listening in later and, you know, getting through that initial intimidation factor of the amount of work it's going to take, what would it be to help make this happen other places?
If you're going to pass a resolution like this, you're going to have to pass it with votes from outside where all your CCL members live. Right? So we already have the votes of the places where we tend to live and work. We need the votes from the rest of the state, and that's not an easy job. So for us, it meant cultivating our CCL members, the few who do live in the rural parts of Utah,
and leaning into that, and not kind of giving up too. I'm sure after the first couple of calls, it might have felt like it was a heavy lift, and you just kept at it, huh?
Yep.
Well, Tom, thank you so much. I know each of our presenters so far, we could spend the whole hour just learning from your wisdom. And again, just thank you so much for being on the line tonight, Tom. All right, Stephanie.
Well, before we get started, I just wanted to go over just some opening considerations that I recommend thinking about when you're working with other organizations. One of the things that I like to tell people is that, you know, when we go to have a conversation with a member of Congress about fee and dividend, we don't always start with talking about fee and dividend. We start with talking about climate, and we kind of work up to that. And we really should be doing the same thing when we're having a discussion with another organization, especially when it's another climate group or environmental group. Relationships matter. You really want to think of the conversations that you're having as opening a door rather than winning a debate. You want to form a relationship with these groups. They're not going to go away. I think part of, and I'll go over this a bit later, but for a lot of groups, getting an endorsement isn't the important thing. It's the relationship that's going to matter more than convincing them that fee and dividend is something they should sign on to right this minute. So remembering to focus on a shared vision for the future. So most environmental groups, especially climate groups, the big thing that we all agree on is where we want to go. It's sort of where we differ is on how we get there. So I find that when you talk about what we want the future to look like, that's a great way to start these conversations. And then to go along with that, and what I just said, don't assume that fee and dividend is the best or the only solution. For a lot of groups, it's not. And that's okay. We can appreciate that groups have different ideas of how to get to the climate and the future that we want. And talking about it as what we think as the best first step based on evidence and based on economists and what scientists have told us is how I like to talk about it. And just remembering that being humble and acknowledging that, you know, we have one idea of how to get there and there's many others is the best way to start these conversations. So why does it matter that we work with other groups at all? Like CCL is pretty powerful. We could probably do this by ourselves, right? We really can't. So we can't pass fee and dividend alone. The climate movement itself is stronger in numbers and it's growing all the time. There's thousands of groups that work on climate change. Just in DC alone, I could tell you there's probably over 500 groups, I would guess. And so the thing to remember is that we don't need every group working for carbon fee and dividend, that we are in this ecosystem of groups and that there's value in having pressure from multiple angles. So there's value in having the national security groups, there's value in the 350s and the green pieces that go out and draw attention to climate. And so remembering that each group kind of plays a different role and that CCL plays a very unique part of that can help you when you're thinking about how to have these conversations. And then just remembering that having these conversations helps us move forward and helps the climate conversation move forward. So some basic outreach guidelines, and again, I'm gonna kind of zoom through these, but I'm happy to go into further detail. We have a grassroots engagement tracker, so that is on community. You always want to check that to make sure somebody else hasn't done the outreach to the group you're thinking of doing it to already. You really want to start local. You want to respect CCL's nonpartisan nature. You want to know your audience before you speak to them, and you want to create those lasting and respectful relationships with other groups. So the engagement tracker, some of you probably remember this as the outreach database. You can go in there, you can search for a group or the name of somebody like Bill McKibben, and you can see if somebody has said, I'm working on this person, and there's a bunch of other info that comes up with that. You really want to remember to check that before you send an email or a call to somebody. And if it's a national organization, the default should be to email me or Danny or Ben or Andres about if the national CCL chapter, our headquarters, has reached out. Because if it's a national group, we most likely already have a conversation happening there. If it's a group that has a local chapter, like 350 or Sierra Club, feel free to reach out to the local chapter. We just don't want 500 CCLers emailing the head of Sierra Club asking him why he doesn't support fee and dividend. It just gets a little tiring. And we want to keep those relationships going, and we're having those conversations already at the national level. So another thing to remember is respecting CCL's nonpartisan nature. So this was something that Elise brought up, was that she's in Berkeley and a lot of the groups she does outreach to are more left of center because Berkeley is very left of center. And so what I really stress to groups is that you want to think about what the layout is in your district and what's going to move your member of Congress. Because that's really what our end goal is. We want to move the national legislature, and moving states and moving local groups helps that, but you want to think towards your goal of moving your member of Congress. And so for a group like Berkeley, it makes tons of sense to work with more environmental and traditional climate groups because those are the groups that members of Congress tend to listen to there. It may not be the same in Utah or at least in the more rural parts of Utah. So you really want to try to think about the things that you're signing on to, how is that going to play with your member of Congress? How is that going to play with CCL overall? National CCL, my job, you know, I have a hard time often finding things for CCL to sign on to because a lot of them are partisan. But one of the things that I love about getting to work with our chapters is we really give you guys the autonomy to figure out what's going to be best for you. And I'm happy anytime you're struggling with, I don't know if we should sign on to this march or this letter, if you ever want to reach out to me, and I'm happy to talk through that with groups. Knowing your audience is really important. So the same way we create bios and we do research before we meet with our member of Congress, you really want to do the same thing before you're going to meet with another group. You want to know, what angle are they coming from? Who's their demographic? What are their major priorities? And how does CCL fit into those values and those priorities? It really will help with your conversation, and it will they'll just be more impressed that you know who they are when you go and meet with them. And a lot of times when you have meetings with other groups, it's okay if it's just a get to know you. You can mention, you know, what we work on, that we work on fee and dividend, but it doesn't have to be always seeking an endorsement. It can be just to have a discussion about different priorities and how we fit together in this ecosystem. And that, again, just goes to that creating lasting and respectful relationships. You don't want to bombard groups with facts and demanding an endorsement a lot of times at first. It works more, you know, with businesses and some of these groups that are farther removed from climate, but it just goes a lot better if you really want to build that trust up. You want to start from a position of talking about why they work on climate, what values they're coming from, and kind of figure out where the overlap is between CCL and the other group. And like I said, there may be times when you don't overlap all that much, but it just is, we're going to keep each other on the radar. When we have events, we're going to let each other know. And that alone builds that trust, which then translates into hopefully being able to get an endorsement down the line when we have a bill or when things are moving a little bit further along. So really quickly, just wanted to go over who is in the climate ecosystem. So there's traditional big greens, the ones that we really think of when we think of environmental work. All of these groups have climate subsections, but climate is not their main beat for the most part. So Sierra Club, EDF, NRDC, and so they have a difficult time. CCL is really lucky that we only work on climate. They are having multiple conversations with the same members of Congress, with the same people in districts about tons of different topics. So oftentimes they're at odds with themselves. Smaller environmental groups that work specifically on climate, I gave a few examples there. There's environmental justice groups, which come from the position of looking out for frontline communities. Often they also are not coming at this from a let's solve climate change perspective. It's more of working on local pollution and health impacts. Eco-right groups, which are more of the conservative-leaning groups, and then peripheral groups that work on climate change, but it's not their main focus. So like faith groups, national security groups, renewable energy, like solar, groups that promote solar, those type of groups. So Brett really wanted me to bring this up, and I've showed this a few times now at the conferences. This is from Bill Moyers, and it's a really cool tool to understanding activist networks and kind of how we all fit into these ecosystems. And there's also graphs that go along with this that talk about when each of these roles are most needed in a movement. So it kind of changes over time. Like at the beginning, you really want to use rebels because they bring attention to a topic, and then later you need reformers. So I really encourage you to look at this think about where CCL fits in. I believe that we fit into this reformer role as well as a little bit of change maker. We tend to use official channels to make change. That's our lobbying. We use people power, which is part of the change agent, and we're trying to build mass-based grassroots organizing. And then I also think we play a little bit of the citizen role by promoting democracy. We work on civics and getting people to be back engaged with their democracy. And it's just important to think about when you're meeting with a group, where do they fit in this ecosystem? Because we really do need all of them for climate change action to happen. And so I find that thinking about this and thinking about when these groups are ineffective and effective, it helps me ground myself in where CCL fits into this and why we need to use everybody and everybody's tactics if we're going to be able to push through meaningful action. And I just wanted to mention too that CCL fits a really unique niche in the climate movement because we are nonpartisan, because we're focused specifically on one topic. That's really unique. Most groups don't work on one topic. And most groups aren't nonpartisan in these days and age. So it's just important to remember that and remember that we walk this fine line, but it's really great that we get to do that and have those conversations on both sides of the aisle, even though they can be difficult sometimes. So you heard some examples from the earlier speakers of ways that CCL groups can work with others. These are just a few others that I would encourage. So state level policy work, this is sort of what Tom is talking about, but there's also lots of CCL groups working specifically on carbon pricing at the state level. Washington State, New York, Massachusetts, there's a bunch of others. And if you're interested in that, you should reach out to Jamie. He's our new state policy coordinator and he works directly with me. We're happy to help you think through if there's some sort of campaign going on in your state, even if it's not carbon pricing, we can think about how and if CCL should be involved and what that would look like. General climate education. So this was a bit of what the earlier presenters were talking about, public educational outreach efforts like tabling or partnering with a group to talk about problem and solution together. And then get out the vote work. This is such a good one that we should be getting involved in because it is nonpartisan, or it tends to be. And it's a great way to work with groups that we wouldn't traditionally be able to partner with, whether they're partisan or not, or groups that don't even work on climate, that just work on get out the vote. It's a really unique opportunity during elections to kind of plug in without having to be partisan. Just getting people out to vote is a great way. And then lastly, just really quick examples of some of the work that I do at the national level. Again, if you have questions about what our relationship is to any national group, I'm happy to talk about that. EDF is a close partner of us. We coordinate on this Climate Solutions Caucus. We work on our Hill strategy together. We talk about educational trainings, both for the Hill and for out in the field. Some other ones are Audubon, which we've done a bit of work with, similar to EDF, and then USCAN, which is the U.S. Climate Action Network, which is the big kind of umbrella group in the U.S. that does, it's a network of environmental groups that work on climate change. And we're a partner in that, and we serve on a couple of the committees there to boost our efforts. That's more of a progressive leaning group. So we sort of serve as one of the bipartisan voices in there.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. And so to close tonight, we'd actually like to invite everyone to think about a partner activity for them to think about an organization that they'd like to take away from tonight's webinar to form a better relationship with locally. Brainstorm together, think about what that could look like, and role play that organization for each other. And then practice what you would say at your first introductory meeting with this organization, thinking about, have you met them before? What kind of history do you have? What do you need to explain about CCL that'll connect your groups, and what common ground and values you can share together? And don't forget to ask, as Stephanie has so aptly reminded us, what they're working on as well.
Thank you so much for being on the line tonight. If you have questions, we did put the emails in the chat. You're more than welcome to email any of the speakers or myself, and we'd love to make sure that you can have anything that you came to tonight's webinar or, you know, walking away with questions answered. But we couldn't do this without you. You're the whole reason throughout the country that these successful examples are happening, and from the bottom of my heart, I just want to especially thank Elise and Carol and Tom and all of your group's efforts for just providing three phenomenal case studies for us to learn from and benefit from tonight, and for everyone else being on the line tonight for the webinar. Thank you, everyone, and feel free to head out or stay on. Hello.